I'm excited to have on the show award-winning filmmaker and animator Terrell Cove, who has been honored a Lifetime Achievement Award for her outstanding contributions in the field of animation and also being honored for her latest short animation film, Maybe Elephants, at the Spark Animation Festival. And I'm so excited to speak with her today because she's going to be talking about her film, Maybe Elephants, and her background. And welcome to the program, Terrell.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yes. Yes. And I want to congratulate you on your outstanding award. So what does this mean to you?
I've been thinking a lot about this because, you know, among other reasons, because I'm here at the festival and I'm going to give a little thank you speech and, you know, have thought about what this means. And I think it's really, it's obviously, you know, an acknowledgement of the work that I've done. And that's really wonderful. I think a Lifetime Achievement Award, it's not really, at least in my case, it's not something that I go around fantasizing about. You know, I wonder if maybe one day somebody will give me a Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, I'm guilty about fantasizing about other kinds of awards, you know, maybe this and maybe that. But a Lifetime Achievement Award is just like, I mean, I met Keith Blackmore in Annecy earlier this summer, and he asked me out for lunch, and I thought, sure, why not? You know, you're at a festival, you have a film out, programmer or producer of another festival wants to have lunch with you, you know, you say, yeah, I'd love to. And then he told me during lunch that Spark Animation would like to give me this Lifetime Achievement Award. And I was just kind of stunned, you know, I just hadn't obviously expected that. So it's very, I find it really moving. I don't know actually how else to describe it. I find it really moving to be given this award. And then also what I like about it too is that it gives me a kind of a platform for not a very long time, but it gives me a platform where I can take the opportunity to thank a lot of people who, you know, I owe a great debt of gratitude for having been able to have this kind of career. So I'm very conscious of all the people around me who have made this possible, you know, for the past 30 years, and I'd like to acknowledge that. And I think a Lifetime Achievement Award, you know, I think it's, you know, I mean, I think there are probably, you could say, oh, well, I guess I have this award now, I've achieved something that people seem to like, I don't have to do anymore, but I think I see it the other way around. I find it more sort of inspiring to do more. So it's not to me like a justification for retirement or anything like that. I would just like, you know, say, well, this is good, you know, so far so good, let's keep going.
Yes. And you know, I watched the film Maybe Elephants, and it is such a wonderful short film, and I'm curious to know, like, I've read that it was based on a sequel of Me and Molten. Is that correct?
Kind of. I mean, it's so Me and My Molten was a film that I made about 10 years ago. And it's about, it's also sort of a little, you know, bite out of my family life when I was a kid. And that film kind of tackles these ideas that, you know, even though you are a close-knit family and everybody loves each other and everybody, you know, does the best that they can and you know, seemingly everything is fine, but there are sort of underlying tensions and conflicts that don't really get spoken about for various reasons. So I should say that in my case, you know, there was nothing dramatic going on. I didn't have like any, you know, like I say, Maybe Elephants, I had a happy childhood, but there are all these kinds of feelings of, you know, for example, feeling as a child that, you know, there are things about your parents that you don't like that much. You know, like you love them, but certain things you don't actually like that much. And you obviously can't tell anyone that because it's hurtful and you wouldn't be able to explain it, you know. So that was me and my Molten, and which I think was a very, it had sort of serious undertone, but I think it was a pretty funny film. It had a lot of humor in it. And then at some point I thought, well, maybe I should, you know, like make people to this and take my family to this journey that I've gone for 3 years to Nairobi, Kenya. And a later chapter of the life.
Yes. And I love the title, Maybe Elephants. Like I just, it, cause I love elephants. And the title was too. And so was the title easy to come up with, like Terrell?
Actually the title was, it was for a long time, the film was called Foreign Country. And it was called Foreign Country because you know, we moved to a foreign country, and foreign country also was kind of like a metaphor for the things that you don't know about other people. In Maybe Elephants, you know, as I was working on the script and the storyboard, I hadn't actually intended it to be like that, but gradually, my mom becomes kind of like the main character, right? And the foreign country in the film is really, you know, what is going on inside her emotionally for her to want to constantly get away and, you know, go to new places and behave in a way that in retrospect I think about as kind of like a escape tactics. You know, maybe from herself, or as I say in the film, maybe from us. It's not entirely clear. So that was the other foreign country. But then there was something gradually, you know, just kind of the word foreign started to become a little jarring because it's like foreign to who exactly? And okay, so now somebody turned off the mic. Excuse me, to move, otherwise it goes away.
It's so
weird. That's how it goes.
It's okay. It's technology.
Sorry about that, Christina. Oh, God, dark. Anyway, so we decided that it wasn't that
it's
there was
okay.
Something not very like something negative about that word foreign, and a little arrogant too for me, the writer of the film too. You know, it's like label Canada a foreign country because obviously it's not foreign to people who live there. And then Maybe Elephants, you know, we had lots of titles bounced around. Finally, Maybe Elephants. I like that because it kind of goes directly to the idea of how well do we really remember things, you know, from that far back. And also elephants are such cool animals. So when you say you love elephants, I wonder because, I mean, yes. I like the idea of elephants. They're beautiful animals, but I was really scared of that one. I don't know if you've seen one up close in the wild, but they're intimidating.
There's no, but it's like I can't imagine how you've seen up close, right?
Yeah, I've seen them up close, and I've seen them kind of trotting towards us. They're really frightening, and they have these big ears that go up like this, you know. It's just like you see it in the movie. They are really exactly like that, and you can hear them, you know, they're kind of pounding the ground. So and I thought that too, you know, this presence of this kinds of symbolic ideas that are quite weighty and frightening, you know, about things that happened in the past and things we may or may not remember correctly and all that. So I thought it was a fitting title. And it does also, it does have a link to
it's
so yeah, so that was good.
And this I understand you, well, you're also do the voiceover as well for the middle sister. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First time.
That's awesome. Yeah. First time, it's great. Yes.
Yeah, it was. I just wrote. I was writing the story. There was a lot of editing that needed in the narrator's lines, and I would just sort of record them as I was drawing, and you know, try to record them so they time nicely with the images and all that. And in the end, I just got so used to listening to my own voice that I thought, you know, we'll just do that. Yeah, and then I got to.
Well, it's colorful. It's beautiful. It's whimsical, if I may say. It's like, is it 3D animation?
It's 2D. It's 2D drawn.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you say it's, maybe it was 3D. I'll take that as a compliment, because that must mean that you're noticing depth in the images. So it's not completely flat. Yeah, but it is 2D. Yeah.
Well, I watched it twice because I was so inspired. It has messaging in there. Growing up, it's going back in your childhood, 1970s, and. Mm-hmm. And it's also very cute, and it's funny. It's just a teenage, and it's so nice for you to share your short film. But like, is it is based on real events throughout, or did you have some of it created, if you will?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there are definitely things that are, you know, there are aspects of it that are autobiographical. And then there are aspects of it that are not, and I tried to kind of blend those two in a way so that I don't know how to explain it exactly, but I was really attached to it being that family in that place and that time period, and I have drawn on family history in many different ways, but there are things that I had to make up and shorten and lengthen just basically to make the story work, right? I think that especially in a short film like this, I mean, you're also very constrained because you have to try to kind of fit in with, you know, I mean, we originally had thought it was going to be 15 minutes. That was not possible. Mm-hmm. Now it's almost 15. Yes. And that does, that means that you have to really be careful about, you know, you have to pick and choose and pare things down so you kind of narrow it down to what is essential in order to tell the story that you want to tell. And in order to do that, there were things that I had to, you know, basically more or less kind of make up, or at least really, really rewrite. One example of that is when we're camping, for example. I mean, we had a camping trip that was really scary, but it didn't happen exactly like that. But what did happen in that story was that my parents really did get. They really kind of just went for a walk in the middle of the night and left us alone at the campsite. So that actually did happen. But the way that we were, you know, helped out of that situation was you know, I had to work on that a bit, so that changed a bit. So I have actually come up with my own kind of genre for this kind of writing that I call autobiographical fan fiction. So I don't know if anyone else has used that. Maybe it's an old thing. But I just thought that is exactly what it is. You know, I take this stuff that is based on reality, and I try to pair that with a story that I want to tell. But and the story almost always has links to personal experiences. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and yeah, Terrell, tell us about the music.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, where to begin?
Yeah.
So I should preface this by saying that usually my husband, who is a jazz musician and composer, Kevin Dean has done the music for all my other films. And he is like really, really good at composing scores that, you know, lift the story up and, you know, really help in the storytelling. And he's like a terrific mood creator and so on. And his approach has usually been that he writes like one piece of music, and as a, you know, the jazz musician that he is, he kind of creates several different kinds of variations on the theme to fit different parts of the film, right? And that's been really, that's worked really well. And I love that way of using music for film. And then, but then this time, you know, when I had my guide track that I put up when I was working on the first rough animatics, my music guide track was just, it was just so eclectic. It had everything in it from, I mean, it had classical music, it's had like 60s Swedish jazz made, you know, based on the Scandinavian folk music. And then it had West African 70s funk, and it had like really sort of classic rhythm and blues, Motown kind of stuff in there. There were some Temptations, there was some Aretha Franklin, and then there was some really, really cool Kenyan traditional music called Benga music. And then, of course, we had Miriam Makeba, and it just kind of went on and on. And my husband just took a listen to that and said, no way, I'm not doing this. Like, hand this over to somebody else. So that's how Luigi came into the picture, because Kevin just said, well, Luigi can do anything, you know, just give it to him or ask him. So Luigi came on board. And I mean, he turned pale a little bit too, I think, when he heard the guide track for the first time. But I think what he managed to do with it is just really, really lovely. And then of course, we got managed to get the collaboration of Daniel Onyango, a Kenyan musician who lives in Sweden and who plays this lovely, haunting, melancholy instrument called the niatiki, and he also sings. So I think in the end, I think we got a score that kind of really, I mean, really replaces my guide track, but in a kind of coherent and how should I put it? It's like, I wouldn't say orderly, but like in a coherent way that sort of really fits the story, and it kind of hangs together. And I think the way that Luigi incorporated Daniel Onyango's music is really like brilliant. So yeah, no, I'm really, really happy with it. I find it very moving, especially when Daniel sings. It's just kind of... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it just extremely evocative and beautiful. Yeah. And Luigi also did some really cool and clever things with some Swedish, very famous Swedish jazz piece, which was made kind of improvised based on a Swedish folk song. And I really loved that piece because I associate that with my father. He used to play it, and we played it on records in our home, and he kind of dissected a bit of the melody and the harmonies from that piece and integrated it very sort of subtly but noticeably into the score. And yeah, it was very, very, I mean, it's like people who contribute to this film on all the levels are just extraordinarily talented, you know, just really great people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, you know, that's wonderful. And you know, Trelby, oh, there you go. It's the, I wanted to, like, what's the feedback been like so far?
It has been, yeah, you know what, it's been really interesting because it has been quite varied. And I always find that, I find that encouraging and interesting. So many people have spoken to me about how you know, about their own experiences with parents who, you know, have their own kind of cloud. That is something that comes up often. You know, many people who have had similar experiences with kind of sort of unnatural breakups of families speak to me about it. I was really touched, actually, a couple of weeks ago. It received a jury award from a youth jury in Norway. And that kind of took me by surprise a little bit, because these kids are like less than 14 years old. They're like 10 to 14 years old. And I think that is like, I just think that's just awesome, because I haven't, this is not a film that I had necessarily thought would be for children or for a young audience. I have thought that it maybe requires a little bit of, you know, the kind of wisdom and nostalgia and ability to look back on a life to appreciate this. But no, here there were these 10-year-olds who thought it was interesting and moving. And they liked the girls, you know, with all the makeup and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I think also, yeah, and the conflict between the kids and the parents and all that. That is great. And then I also recently received an audience award at an animation festival in South Korea, in Busan. There is an international animation festival, and it received the audience award there too. And I'm not mentioning this to brag about my awards. It's just to describe kind of the range of people who find something in this. Yeah, I just find it really interesting that there's an audience South Korea who see this film that is, you know, takes place in Africa, is made in Norway and Canada, so it is really, you know, very Western film, and they get it, you know. I just think that's great, and you know, so my impression is that people are touched and moved by it for different reasons. And you know, ultimately, that's kind of what I mean, I don't want to make people feel sad or anything like that, but there's a kind of, you know, these things of like a common humanity topics that I think, I mean, if I can succeed in sort of tapping into that, I think that I have, you know, gotten something right.
No, I mean, Terrell, like, is there anything else you'd like to add that I didn't ask you that you would like to say?
Oh my goodness. No, those were really nice questions. Very nice. I could kind of ramble on about these questions. But, well, I mean, I think I always would like, I mean, given an opportunity, I would like to say that this was a really fabulous production. I think that, it was made partly in Norway, partly at the NFB. These were two studios that have worked together before. I had amazing producers. I'm just always so happy and grateful to be able to make a film with the NFB and with my the studio that I work with in Oslo called Microfilm. They're just, you know, they're just fabulous people, and they, you know, I come dragging with these, you know, ideas that I think don't look like much, you know, they're just kind of ramblings a little bit, and they manage to see something in it that they think is worth pursuing and give me the opportunity to do that, and I think that makes me an incredibly fortunate filmmaker. So yeah, thank you NFP, thank you Microfilm. I don't know. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, and I think partly, you know, coming out of COVID and everybody having felt so miserable during COVID, and then we come out and we have this production and it's just kind of full steam ahead, you know. And Yeah. And I think also, I think that it feels good to me. I mean, this is a very vulnerable film. It is about, you know, my mother, and it is about, you know, it's a film where I feel like I'm giving myself an opportunity to say to her, even though she's not around anymore, to say, you know, I have felt bad about the way that our family temporarily sort of scattered. And I think that it has had a bit of impact on my life and my sister's lives too, I think. But I look back on her, my mom. I mean, she was like my life's first feminist. She just, you know, she wanted stuff. She was a lone woman in like an extremely male-dominated profession. She had, you know, she insisted on believing that she could have children and pursue a profession, even though everyone around her told her she couldn't. And she was idealistic and engaged in society. And, you know, I think she wanted to contribute somehow. And I look back at that and I think, I get it. You know, I'm glad that you did it that way. And in the end, I am just going to focus on, like, yeah, those were elephants. She did chase with elephants. You know, she looked up
yes.
those really
yes.
well. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So it is in a way, I mean, it's kind of like a little ode to my mom and also to Kenya, because I learned so much from living there. I think it was a very, very important experience for all of us, maybe especially us teenagers. You go to a country like Kenya, you know, as young Norwegian person who's never been out of the country before, you know, has never seen anyone but white people before. And you go to this country and you realize that, you know, it's actually not that difficult to connect with people, even if you have, no shared history, no shared country. You can still connect, you know, on other levels. And it's fun. So that was a really good thing to learn, and I'm very happy about that, too. So there you go. So I guess I did have a couple of things that I wanted to say.
Yes. I'm so glad, Torell. I so enjoyed our conversation today, and thank you so much for being on the program. I would love for you to come back and thank you.
This was a very nice conversation. Thank you very much for this.